Go to the book of Genesis, chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. We'll look at 14 and 15. First, let's have a word of prayer. Father, we thank you that we can gather together, that we can study your word. Lord, I don't think we can truly appreciate the value of your word, but the fact that you have seen that it would be inspired and preserved and available to us. We're going to be looking at stories that took place thousands of years ago, but yet are still relevant, and we can still have in our day. So we thank you for that privilege, God. We pray you'd give us wisdom and help us to understand more deeply the Old Testament. Well, thank you for it. Amen. All right. If you look at Genesis 2:14, it says, the name of the third river was Tigris. It flows east of Assyria, and the fourth river is the Euphrates. Then the Lord God took a man and put him in the Garden of Eden to cultivate it and keep it. Now, I read that text for two reasons. There's the Tigris, there's the Euphrates. Now, somewhere in there perhaps would be Eden. We do not know where Eden was. Nobody can know where Eden was. Whatever proof there was of Eden was washed away in the flood. For those of us who believe in a universal flood, we would also realize that even though that's called the Tigris and the Euphrates, that doesn't mean it was the rivers that existed during the Garden of Eden, because the worldwide flood, for those of us who believe in a universal flood, would have totally changed the topography. So those rivers probably got their name for the ancient rivers, but yet we can't be dogmatic and say those are the same two rivers. But those are the two rivers that are mentioned. As an example, in verse 13, there's another river, Pishon, and then a second river, verse 13, Gihon. We don't know anything about those rivers. Okay. But what we do know, as we saw last week, that the Bible story takes place in this region, which used to be called the Fertile Crescent. It used to be called the birthplace of civilization. Now, modern scholarship rejects that. They have some other, they don't think there was one place. But nevertheless, we were taught in school back in the old days that we call this the birthplace of civilization, or the cradle of civilization, because so many of the ancient civilizations that became ultimate power came from the same region, right? Persia, well, first Assyria, then they were supplanted by the Babylonians, and then they were supplanted by the Persians. As we mentioned last week, these countries still exist. Persia is Iran, Babylonia is Iraq, Assyria is Syria. In the desert, you have Saudi Arabia. Up here, you have Turkey. You have Lebanon here. You got Jordan here. And of course, Israel, and then Egypt all through here. But civilization sprung around the Tigris and Euphrates in this region because it was so fertile. It is no longer a fertile crescent, as you know. It is mostly desert, and now the main crop is oil. Okay. But as we saw last week, so the Bible, the Old Testament history, and really New Testament history, all take place in this region. If you go to Genesis chapter 11. Look at verse 27. Now these are the records of the generations of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Naor, and Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his birth, Ur of the Chaldees, which was down here in this region. So this is the birthplace of Abraham in Ur of the Chaldees. Go down to verse 31. Terah took Abram his son and Lot the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarah his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldees in order to enter the land of Canaan, and they went as far as Haran and settled there. So where they settled, they named after the father, okay, but they went from Ur up here to Haran. They were going to make their way to Canaan, of course. That was the land that Abraham had been promised, but as you know, they ended up being in Egypt in captivity. Then when they got out of Egypt, they wandered in the desert, the wilderness, until they eventually crossed back into Canaan. So if you look at chapter 12 is a very important transition point in the Old Testament. Chapter 12 says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." So Abram, who will become Abraham, went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot was with him. Now Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions, which they accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. All right, so the Old Testament covers approximately 2,000 years of history, okay? 2,000 years of history, starting with really Abraham. Now, we don't know, you know, depending on how you interpret Genesis 1 through 11 as far as a time frame, from Genesis 12 to the end of the Old Testament, or the time of Christ, is about 2,000 years. But Genesis 1 through 11 is much more than that, regardless of how you might determine when creation was. Okay, however long that was, that started in Genesis 1 and came to a conclusion in Genesis 11. Genesis 12 starts with Abraham and starts to tell the story of the Jewish nation, okay? So you have thousands and thousands of years in chapters 1 through 11, but starting with Abraham, then you have 2,000 years till Christ, and then Moses came around 1400 BC before Christ, okay? So again, when I say Genesis covers 2,000 years, I'm meaning from Abraham on. How much before Abraham? When was the Garden of Eden, and what took place in that span is much longer than 2,000 years. So the Old Testament basically covers four main movements of Israel's history. Okay. The first movement is what we call Israel's ancestry, or the patriarchs. So the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Israel, the founding of the Jewish nation, the forefathers of the Jewish nation, all happen in Genesis. And it covers about 500 years, 2000 to 1500. Okay. Israel's beginnings, which would include from like Moses to Joshua, or in other words, Exodus to the book of Judges, covers about another 500 years, roughly 1500 to 1000. Then you have Israel's statehood, which we pretty much start with David's dynasty, King David. It lasted another 500 years, 1000 to 500. And then you have Israel's exile and restoration, which is Ezra through Nehemiah, another that's up to about 500 BC. So you got four major developments that are happening. The first one is all in the book of Genesis, the founding fathers. Then Exodus through Judges is the beginning, statehood with David, and then they get exiled, as we saw. So when they finish the desert wanderings and they come back into Israel and they move from being 12 tribes to a solid nation, first under Saul and then David, then Solomon. Then, of course, they have civil war and they're now the northern kingdom called Israel, the southern kingdom called Judah. When the Assyrians rose to power, they carried away, they took into exile, captivity, the northern nation. When the Babylonians supplanted the Assyrians, then they came and conquered the southern nation, the southern half, which was called Judah, and they carried it away to Babylon. So you had people that had been carried away to Assyria, Jews had been carried away to Babylon. When Persia rose to power and, of course, supplanted Babylonia, under King Cyrus, they released the Jews back to their nations. That's where we start. That's where we pick up with Ezra, Nehemiah, and so on. Okay. So that's the region. That's the major players that we have to kind of understand to appreciate what we're seeing then in the Old Testament. Okay. The Old Testament, the first five books in the Old Testament is called the Pentateuch. The Pentateuch. Penta being five, of course. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy is commonly referred to as the Pentateuch. It's part of the larger historical book section, 17 historical books. The word means five scrolls. The five scrolls. It's also referred to, of course, as the Book of the Law or the Law of Moses. Moses wrote the majority of the Pentateuch up until the last chapter of Deuteronomy when his death is recorded. But the Pentateuch, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the first five books, also called the Law of Moses. So Moses is obviously the central character after Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in Israel. Let's see here. Go to 2 Kings 14. Verse 6. But the sons of the slayers he did not put to death, according to what was written in the book of the law of Moses. Okay, I just want to draw your attention to that phrase. Written in the book of the law of Moses. That is referring to the first five books. Okay, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. It's the giving of the law. It's the giving of the Jewish ceremonial system of worship, the regulations, both for religious and social So this is why in 2 Kings it refers back to the Pentateuch as the book of the law of Moses. Joshua, go to Joshua. Joshua 1:8, familiar verse. This book of the law, Joshua 1:8, this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that was written in it, so then you will have your way, make your way prosperous, and you will have success. So this book of the law, again, is referring to the five books of Moses, the Pentateuch. What's important here is that this is Joshua, and it had already been, it was already in existence. Moses had already written it down. They were already recognizing it, okay? So by the time of Joshua, it's already been codified as the book of the law, the five books of Moses. So when you look at the Old Testament, the first five books form a unit that we refer to as the law or the Pentateuch. Luke 16. Luke 16, 16. Here we have a New Testament reference. And again, these references are all over. I'm just picking out samples to prove the point here. Verse 16, the law and the prophets were proclaimed until the death of John. So you have the law and the prophets. Which is shorthand for pretty much the rest of the Old Testament. So we always see that the law stands by itself, although it's part of the bigger whole. So it's five books, but it's one unit that the Jews would call the Torah, which is the word for law. Okay, but it was more than just laws and instructions. There were themes. As you read Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, there are themes that come out that are important for the rest of the book, the rest of the Bible. But these include, you know, God's sovereignty. It gives us the history of human fallen condition. We see hints of salvation through the sacrifice of the innocent. The requirement of holiness. Now we see those things in the law. We see the completion of those things in the New Testament. Okay, how does this requirement of holiness? What do we do? Because we're not holy. Well, we find out how we become holy in the New Testament. So the Pentateuch basically spans history from the beginning of time, creation, until they enter into the Promised Land. So again, at the end of Deuteronomy, they're on the verge of the Promised Land. Moses cannot go in because he had sinned by smiting the rock twice when God told him not to. He couldn't go in. So as he stands on the edge, the book of Deuteronomy ends and they go in under Joshua. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua. So that ends the law as they enter into the Promised Land. But as you read through, it's the story of God's people, the nation of Israel. Now go back to Genesis 3:15. The word Genesis, by the way, of course, means origins. So this, the book of Genesis, is the origin of the earth and of mankind and the nation of Israel. But part of this overall storyline is that a Messiah is coming. Okay, we'll see this right at the very beginning of Genesis, all the way through the Old Testament. A Messiah is coming. A deliverer is coming. Moses said, a prophet will rise up who's greater than me. He's coming. God told Abraham, God, I myself will provide the sacrifice. So look at Genesis 3:15. And the Lord is speaking to Satan, and he says, I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed. You shall he shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel. That is what we call the first messianic prophecy, that there will come from the woman, from her seed, one who will crush Satan. Okay, so from Genesis 3 on, it's a developing story of the Messiah. Particularly Genesis 1 through 11 presents the problem. What do we read Genesis 1 through 11? Murder, mayhem, rebellion. So we see humanity's depravity. But starting in chapter 12, we see the start of the solution. Right? When God says to Abraham, from you I will bless all the nations. All right, from you I will send forth a deliverer. So we have 11 chapters of Genesis that shows how bad mankind can be. But starting in Genesis chapter 12 through the rest of Genesis is a story of a family and their journey to faith. Again, Abraham has Isaac. Isaac has Jacob. Jacob has 12 sons that become the 12 sons of Israel. So it's really a family story. So we're going to look at today, we're just going to look at the Pentateuch. This is a survey class, okay, so not in great detail, but just so we kind of get the lay of the land. So Genesis is the origins of everything. I've often said that all good theology starts in Genesis. Genesis teaches us from the very beginning that there's a God and everything else. There's God and everything else. There's a clear distinction between the Creator and His creation. Okay, creation is not God. There's one God and you're not Him. There's God and everything else. In Genesis 1, He's the transcendent Creator. In Genesis 2, He's the personal God. Who, if you will, gets his hands involved when he slays the sin covering for Adam and Eve. Genesis 11:32. Yeah, that's. So it comes to an end when Terah dies in Haran, and then the Lord said to Abraham. So from here on out, it's the story of Abraham's family. We have genealogies given before here, but now it's narrowed down to a single family. Okay. In Genesis 12 through 25, you have the story of Abraham and Isaac. In chapters 25 to 36, you have the story of Jacob and his 12 sons. And then we focus starting at Genesis 37 with one of those sons named Joseph. Go to chapter 50. Verse 26. So Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. So Genesis ends in Egypt. Okay, this was not, this was not how the story of Abraham was supposed to play out. Remember, God said, leave Haran, go to the land I promised you, the land of Canaan. And I will make your descendants like the sand on the seashore, and you will have this promised land. But as you know, famine came, and they had to go into Egypt. Joseph became their deliverer in Egypt. After, you know, his brothers had rejected him and sent him into slavery, he rose to power in Egypt. When his brothers come a-knocking, they find that Joseph is the one who is in authority under Pharaoh. But the story of Genesis ends in Egypt. Exodus, the next book of the Bible, comes from, again, this idea of exiting Egypt. So Joseph dies in Egypt. That kind of ends that part of Israel's history. That really kind of ends that Abraham's story. Because now in Exodus, we're going to pick up with Moses. Okay. So Exodus, whereas Genesis was the origin of everything, Exodus is about a miraculous escape. When you think of Exodus, think of escape. Okay. Exodus is a picture of salvation, how God is going to save his people from bondage. Look at chapter Exodus 12, 13. Exodus 12, 13. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you live, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. So the story of Exodus is about the miraculous escape from Egypt, which is through the Passover lamb. Through the Passover lamb. So when you come to Exodus, the first 18 chapters basically is this redemption of Israel through the shedding of the blood. God redeems Israel. When we get to chapter 19, it shifts a little bit. Look at chapter 19, verse 1. So they have left Egypt, and they have come to Mount Sinai. All right? In the third month after the sons of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on that very day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. And when they had set out for Rephidim, they came to the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness, and there Israel camped in front of the mountain. Moses went up to God, and the Lord called him from the mountain and said, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the sons of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, notice that word covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you shall speak to the sons of Israel. So here God establishes the covenant, this special relationship with Israel, and because of this covenant relationship with Israel, God now dwells among them. Look at chapter 25. Verse 8. Let them construct a sanctuary for me, that I may dwell among them, according to all that I'm going to show you, as the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furniture, so you shall construct it. So, God redeems Israel from Egypt, He establishes a covenant with them, and because of the covenant with them, he puts his presence among them. So you have all the instructions that we'll see here in the next book, okay, about the tabernacle, tent of meeting, as it sometimes is also called. But that's the story of Exodus. So Genesis ends in a coffin in Egypt. Okay, Genesis ends with a dead body in Egypt, Joseph in Egypt. How did we get to where we ended up? Well, Exodus tells us that story. God establishes a relationship and makes a covenant with them and dwells in their midst. So that's Genesis and Exodus. Now Leviticus, let's go to Leviticus 19. Leviticus gets its name from Levi, the priest. So Levi was the priest, the tribe that got chosen as the priesthood. Therefore, we get the word of Leviticus from Levi. But Leviticus gives us instructions on holy living. So when God establishes his presence among Israel, he then gives instructions on how they are to live with God in their midst. Okay? So he gives these Levitical laws and instructions, the point of which is to be to show the seriousness of sin and the need for a sacrifice. It's not that they could live this way. They couldn't. They couldn't. They needed a sacrifice. Look at 19:2. Speak to all the congregation of the sons of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. So there's the rub, okay? He says to the people, you need to be holy because I'm holy. If I'm going to live among you, then you need to be holy. Of course, they're not. Right? They're not. And left to ourselves, we're not. So you have in Leviticus the establishment of the sacrificial system, okay, the need for sacrifice. Now, in the New Testament, the book of Hebrews takes that and shows us how that's all fulfilled in Christ. So in Leviticus, they had to sacrifice, they sacrificed daily. They sacrificed on the Day of Atonement, on Yom Kippur. So there was continual sacrifice and the shedding of blood continually. There was all these laws about what kind of offering you had to bring and what kind of condition it had to be in. But that was all to point towards the fact that that would be fulfilled in Jesus. Okay? So it's the implication being the only way we're ever going to arrive at holiness is through Jesus. We're not going to do it by keeping the law. We're not going to keep it by ritual, by regulations. We need a once for all sacrifice, and that's Jesus. Now, all this is taking place, of course, while they are wandering in the desert. In the book of Numbers, covers that in more detail. Look at Numbers 14:11. Numbers 14:11. The Lord said to Moses, how long will this people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs that I have performed in their midst. Okay, so even though they have the presence of God among them, they still are rebellious. They're still wanting to go their own way. They still complain. They wouldn't go into the promised land, so they've spent 40 years wandering in the desert. just wondering and wondering and wondering. Now, the book of Numbers gets its name because there are two censuses taken. Look at Numbers chapter 1. Numbers 1, 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting. And on the first of the second month, in the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt, saying, take a census of all the congregation of the sons of Israel by their families, by their fathers' households, according to the number of names, every male head by head. So here you have right at the beginning of their wilderness wanderings where God tells them to take a census. Okay. And then you go to chapter 26. Near the end of their wandering. Then it came about, verse 1, then it came about after the plague that the Lord spoke to Moses and Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saying, take a census of all the congregations of the sons of Israel from 20 years old and upward by their father's households, whoever is able to go out to war in Israel. So the book of Numbers literally gets its name because it took a lot of numbers, right? They were counting the people. Now remember, as they were wondering, when they did not obey God and go into the land of Egypt, into the land of Israel, and they were condemned to wander for 40 years, everybody 20 years old and upward died in the wilderness. When from that event, while they wandered for 40 years, everyone died except, of course, Joshua and Caleb, because they believed God and said, we can do this. But everybody else died. So through the numbers, we see that the amount is affected by the fact that people are dying in the wilderness and they're not going to be able to go into the promised land, including Moses. But after 40 years, they do get to go into the promised land. And before they go, Moses, who can't go with him, wants to restore the covenant God had made at the beginning. He wants to give them the law a second time. Again, that's what Deuteronomy means, a second giving of the law. He gives the law right on the edge of the promised land. Okay, right on the edge of the promised land. Look at Deuteronomy 6. And this again, this is Moses' words to them as they are getting ready to go, cross over. Deuteronomy 6:6, these words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Now, the significance there is, of course, teach it to your sons would be necessary because the previous generation is going to be dead. The generation that saw what God had accomplished in Egypt, right? We're all dead. They weren't going to be able to go into the promised land. So Moses wants this new generation to restore the covenant. Go to chapter 32. Let's see, 32:46. He said to them, take to your heart all the words which I am warning you today, which you shall command your sons to observe carefully, even all the words of this law. Again, Moses knew he was writing under the inspiration. He's given the law of God. This wasn't his law. This wasn't Moses' words. It was the words of the law. verse 47, for it is not an idle word for you. Indeed, it is your life. By this word, you will prolong your days in the land which you are about to cross the Jordan to possess. All right, so Deuteronomy, Exodus takes place when they're on the verge of leaving Egypt. Deuteronomy takes place when on the verge of finally going into the promised land. But it's all about covenant. God had made a covenant. The Latin word for covenant is testament. So the old covenant is the Old Testament. But it's God's oath to mankind through Abraham, through the Israelites. So that is the first five books. That's the Pentateuch. That's the Law of Moses. Takes us from, again, Eden to the very edge of the promised land, about to go in. And then that picks up Joshua, and we'll look more at the rest of that next Sunday. Okay, you're dismissed. Thank you.
Question.
Yeah.
Abraham is 75 years old when he makes that long walk.
Yes.
He dies at 175.
I think, yes.
Yeah, 175.
Right.
Now he's traveled into Egypt and back up again. Now, how old?
Abraham, Abraham, not necessarily his descendants.
Yeah, but he made that trip up around, down into Egypt, and came back up into.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yes.
Now, relating his time, I don't know what a year in that time would have been. But I also then wonder, the Israelites were 40 years wandering around in the desert. Is that kind of the same kind of numbers that Abraham would have lived?
A year, has a year has always been constant, the same 365 days?
Right.
Is that what you're saying? I believe so. That's an interesting question, John, but I'd have to think some more about that, but yes, yes. So he lived a long time, if that's what your point is.
Yeah.
Yeah, if a year is 365 days, then he lived a lot of them.
And how long might have that trip been?
Well, again, if you're walking, well, they could have had some camels, I guess, yes. I don't know, but you realize that this is not... Israel is about the size of New Jersey, right? So I wouldn't want to walk across New Jersey, but, you know, it'd be... Now, that's a good question. I don't know what that distance is.
How big geographically is that area?
Scale-wise, I can't... Yeah. I can't tell you that. Yeah, I guess so. Thank you. Okay. All right, thanks.